I'm Ron DeLegge, inventor of the Portfolio Report Card, which tells you if your investment plan is on or off track. No more guessing about your investment portfolio's fees, risk, tax efficiency, and performance. Go to PortfolioReportCard.com to get started. Find out if your IRA, 401k plan, and investment account passes or fails. Take off the blinders and invest with confidence. Go to PortfolioReportCard.com to get started and find out if your investment plan passes or fails.
You're listening to the Index Investing Show. This is America's only weekly program focused on the important stock and bond indexes and the financial products that track them.
And now presenting your host,
Ron DeLegge. Ron DeLegge.
Coming up on today's show, stock markets at record high. What does it mean for you? We'll talk about that. Also coming up on today's program, I do a portfolio report card for PLR in Medley, Florida. They're in their early 60s. It's a couple, and they asked me to analyze and grade their $863,000 investment portfolio. Does it pass? Does it fail? What kind of grade do they get? A, B, C, D, or F? If they get an A, I pay them $100. We're going to break down their portfolio in terms of cost, diversification, risk, tax efficiency, and performance, and give PLR a final report card grade. Also coming up, my program guest, Dan Dolan of the Select Sector Spider ETFs will be joining us. We'll be talking about some of the drivers underneath the broader stock market's move. We'll take a look at some of the key industry sectors. And if you'd like to join us to talk about a particular stock, mutual fund, or ETF, or investment theme, 877-711-5611. That is the number. Give me your first name along with your city, along with your ticker symbols. If you're too shy to call, no problem. You can tweet the program at Index Show. You can also email me, ron@indexshow.com. So let's begin with the S&P 500 hitting a new record high, almost 2,100. We saw the same thing with the Russell Small Cap 2000 Index, and some of these small cap stocks also hitting all-time highs. Now, some of the key driving components within the index, Apple, which comprises around 10% of the NASDAQ composite and is also part of the S&P 500, the stock is up 64% over the past year and 15% since the beginning of the year. So Apple shares continue to surge higher and push up these various indexes. Also, other companies that are driving the market higher, Amazon.com is up 23% since the beginning of the year. So see, these are some of the companies that have been driving the market higher. As some of the industry sectors also that have been doing well this year, we see technology really coming to life, ahead by just over 3%. And this has not been one of what we might say one of the top performing industry sectors over the past 52 weeks. Really, we've seen utility stocks, XLU, which are defensive. That's been kind of really a strong area, along with healthcare, XLV. Both of these areas defensive in nature, but we're starting to see some of these more offensively oriented sectors like technology really begin to shoot higher. So that's what's going on there. In terms of home values, the median price of existing U.S. home was up, according to the National Association of Realtors. Home prices edging higher to an average of $208,700 in the 3 months ending December 31st. That's a 6% increase from a year earlier. Also, in terms of bonds, a lot of bond sales in U.S. corporate land. Microsoft, one of the few companies with a AAA credit rating, completed the largest U.S. corporate bond sale thus far in 2015, selling almost $11 billion in debt. So that's something we see happening in the bond market. And speaking of bonds, the fear trade, as far as long-term bonds are concerned, seems to be taking a little bit of a breather. Now, I would not go out and say that we've seen official bear market yet in bonds, especially long-term bonds, which have been sizzling performers over the past year. But we have seen a sharp pullback happening in some of these long-term bonds. Nevertheless, we have not yet gotten stopped out in our ETF guide newsletter and weekly picks. We've been long since March of 2014. TLT, UBT, and TMF, these three ETFs all have exposure to long-term U.S. treasuries. Now, these are U.S. treasuries with expirations or maturities of longer than 20 years. Again, those ticker symbols, TLT is the straight-ahead version. UBT aims for double daily performance. And TMF aims for triple daily performance. Those are the leveraged cousins of TLT. And these particular ETFs, again, we're seeing a little bit of a sharp pullback thus far in 2015, yet we remain above our stop loss levels. So we're going to see what happens this week. Is it risk on or risk off? Thus far, it seems like we're risk on, and people are piling into stocks again, pushing up indexes higher. So, and that, of course, has meant, you know, less fear and less desire for some of these more defensive assets like long-term U.S. treasuries. So that's kind of what's going on there. In terms of other asset classes, we'll get you caught up a little bit later on what's happening elsewhere with U.S. REITs as well as gold and international markets. 877-711-5611, that is the number. I'm Ron DeLegge. You're listening to the Index Investing Show. If you'd like to join us to talk about a particular stock, mutual fund, ETF, I'm game. If you want to try to steal $100 from me and get an A on your portfolio report card, that is when I analyze and grade your portfolio, you get $100 from me if you score an A. Well, go ahead, take my challenge. Let's see how good you really are. Go to portfolioreportcard.com and submit your request. And on today's show, I will be doing a portfolio report card for PLR in Medley, Florida. Now, before I do this, I want to just say, let me pose this question to our audience. How can a person tell the difference between a healthy and unhealthy investment portfolio? Naturally, it's by how well or how poorly that portfolio does at addressing crucial areas like taxes, cost, diversification, risk, and performance. Now, here's the problem. Poorly constructed investment portfolios are usually ignorant about these first four things, which explains why unsatisfactory performance results usually follow. So PLR in Medley, Florida, is a vibrant married couple in their early 60s. He's still working. She's retired. They have a financial advisor, but recently became concerned about the cost and investment choices within their portfolio. So PLR asked me to analyze and grade their combined portfolios to identify strengths and weaknesses of their $863,309 nest egg. Now, after I briefly chatted with PLR, they told me a couple of important facts that I need to share with you. They're still in the accumulation phase of their investment plan. They intend to hold off on taking any retirement distributions and accessing Social Security until they reach the final or full retirement age. They said to me, quote, "We want to protect what we've accumulated and only pull out 3% of our portfolio every year starting in 2018. Now, PLR's combined portfolios consist of two traditional IRAs, two Roth IRAs, a joint taxable account, and across all these accounts, PLR owns a total of 17 different mutual funds and 7 exchange-traded funds. It's also worth mentioning that PLR told me that they expect to receive a very, very poor portfolio report card grade of D or F. Come on, PLR, be a little bit more positive. So will they be able to beat their own depressed expectations? Well, we're going to do a portfolio report card on today's program for PLR. We're going to take a look at some of these specific holdings that they have. And this $863,000 nest egg that they've built up. I'm Ron DeLegge. This is the Index Investing Show. 877-711-5611. Be here or be nowhere.
Index Investing Show with Ron DeLegge.
Okay, listen to me very closely. A broadly diversified portfolio, what is that defined at? What's the definition of that? Well, it's very simple. It's a portfolio that has exposure to all the major asset classes. Those five major asset classes: stocks, bonds, real estate, commodities, and cash. Okay, those are the five major asset classes that all diversified portfolios have exposure to. Now, if your portfolio misses or lacks exposure to any one of those five asset classes, well, then by definition, you're not diversified. So find out how well your portfolio does in some of the other key areas. Go to PortfolioReportCard.com, and I'll tell you. Now, if you get an A, I pay you $100. If you don't get an A, well, that's not the end of the world, is it? Because you might get a B, which is a pretty darn good score. But if you get a C, D, or F, clearly, that means you've got some major issues and structural flaws within your portfolio's design that need to be addressed if you're going to reach your financial goals and if you're going to stay on track. Now, before we do our portfolio report card for PLR in Medley, Florida, I want to get you caught up real quick on what some key asset classes are doing performance-wise. I give you this so that you've got a point of reference so that you can look, see, and compare the performance of your own portfolio and see if you're keeping up or falling behind. Take a look at the total U.S. stock market, which since the beginning of 2015 has increased in value by almost 2.5%. International stocks from countries like Japan and the United Kingdom and Canada and Austria and Australia up a VEA about almost 5%. Also, VWO, which tracks emerging market stocks, ahead by just over 4%. The total U.S. bond market is up by around 0.5%. Gold, ticker symbol GLD, up 3.9%. And then U.S. REITs, also known as Real Estate Investment Trust, ahead by an even 5%. As far as industry sectors are concerned within the S&P 500, Dan Dolan of the Select Sector Spider ETFs will be joining us in the next segment. We'll get you caught up on what some of those key industry sectors are doing, what's hot, what's not, and what's in between. So stay tuned for that. If you'd like to follow us and tweet us, at Index Show is my Twitter handle. You can also email the program, ron@indexshow.com. Again, that's ron@indexshow.com. 877-711-5611 is the number. You can also call us. We're here. And if you do, give us your first name along with your city. So PLR's $863,309 investment portfolio, already told you that this consists of two traditional IRAs, two Roth IRAs. It's a joint taxable account. PLR is a married couple in their early 60s. They own 17 mutual funds, 7 ETFs, and I'm going to break down some of those funds. We're not going to list all of them for you, but just some of the key holdings that they have. And let's begin in the first grading category, which is cost. A portfolio with excessive investment cost does not need a bad year to underperform. And that's why minimizing investment costs to the greatest degree possible is tantamount. Now, this means cutting fund expenses. It means cutting brokerage commissions and other frictional costs that erode your portfolio's value. Now, the average expense ratio for PLR's mutual fund and ETF holdings is 91 basis points. That's 0.91%. And if we add another 1% for the annual advisor fee that they're currently paying, well, the total expenses approach 2% annually. Although PLR does own a few low-cost ETFs, some of these ticker symbols I'm going to give you, ticker symbol B and D, has exposure to bonds. Ticker symbol IWV, that's an iShares ETF with exposure to growth stocks. XLV and XLB, two sector funds. These are all low-cost ETFs. That's good to see. Unfortunately, the bulk of PLR's money is in higher-cost funds. And some of these tickers, AQMIX, that's the AQR Managed Futures Strategy Fund. They've also got the Guggenheim Macro Opportunities Fund, GIOIX, the PIMCO Unconstrained Bond Fund, PUBAX. Now, these are just some of the funds, again, that have high expenses that are eroding PLR's money and, unfortunately, contribute to a very high-cost portfolio. So not a good start in terms of cost. Next up is diversification. Authentic diversification, and I already explained this to you at the outset, but it's worth repeating, is all about exposure to all the major asset classes. And I've listed those for you many times, and I will continue to proclaim that message. Stocks, bonds, commodities, real estate, and cash. Those are the five biggies. Now, PLR's combined IRAs and taxable account has exposure to U.S. as well as foreign stocks. That's good. They also have exposure to bonds. That's good. They also have exposure to cash. Also very good. So excellent job in terms of diversifying in those areas. However, when I drill down a little bit deeper and I look at the combined portfolios, I do find that PLR misses some major asset classes, including global real estate. Yes, real estate's a major asset class, and just because you own a home does not necessarily mean you should not have exposure in your portfolio to real estate. And the main reason because of that is because, well, you own U.S. residential real estate, right? That's what you have exposure to, but you don't have exposure to global real estate, which includes companies that invest and develop and build. That could be office properties. It could be industrial properties. It could be apartments. It could be shopping centers. See, this is the type of real estate that you probably don't have exposure to, and that's why having this as a major asset class or component of your portfolio is so crucial. Also, they lack exposure to international bonds as well as commodities. Now, they own some multi-asset class funds like ticker symbol JHAIX as well as MASFX. And multi-asset class portfolios or funds own multiple asset classes within the same portfolio or fund. So they can hold simultaneous positions in things like stocks, bonds, whatever else, cash, commodities. It's multi-asset class in the same fund. And part of the problem that I see with multi-asset class funds is that they complicate the process of precise asset allocation, because what's happening is managers can increase or decrease their market exposure to whatever asset classes they want at will. And it's difficult to know which asset classes they're favoring, which ones they're not, and to simultaneously adjust your portfolio on the fly so that you don't have too much exposure to one area. And so what I'm saying, again, is that the multi-asset class funds that they own are complicating their overall portfolio in terms of diversification. So that's just a side note, but one last thing I discovered was a real dearth of core fund holdings in PLR's portfolio. These are funds that could rightly be classified as broadly diversified proxies of the asset classes they track. So as far as I can tell, PLR does have some diversification, but certainly can make some improvements. If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Index Investing Show. I'm doing a portfolio report card for PLR in Medley, Florida. They're in their early 60s. They brought me an $863,000 investment portfolio. They want me to analyze and grade it, and that's what we're doing on today's show. We just looked at cost. They need to make some improvements there in minimizing investment costs. Diversification, we already looked at. Next up, we'll look at risk, tax efficiency, and performance, and then we'll give them a final report card grade of A, B, C, D, or F. If they get an A, I pay them $100. So we'll take a look at that. Stay tuned. I'll give you an update also on some of the other happenings in financial markets, things that you should be aware of. Also coming up next, Dan Dolan will be my program guest. He's with the Select Sector Spider ETFs. He joins us next. Go nowhere.
The Index Investing Show with Lon DeLegge.
Are you frustrated with how your investments never seem to grow? Do you feel like your investment plan might be off track? Are you concerned about your portfolio's fees, taxes, and risk? If you answered yes to any of these questions, you're not alone. Get the help you need with Ron DeLegge's free portfolio report card. Get a snapshot of your current investments and find out if your financial plan is really on track. Go to etfguide.com and click on Ron's portfolio report card. Millions of people are investing blindly in the stock market. Don't be one of them. Ron DeLegge's free portfolio report card tells you everything you need to know about your portfolio's fees, taxes, and risk. Go to etfguide.com and click on Ron's portfolio report card. Traditional IRA, Roth IRA, 401k plan, or brokerage account. It doesn't matter what you have. Ron's free portfolio report card will tell you everything you need to know. Go to etfguide.com and click on Ron's portfolio report card. Don't invest without it.
What sectors are driving the stock market? What's up? What's down? What are the latest trends? We're pleased to have with us Dan Dolan, Director of Wealth Management Strategies at the Select Sector Spiders, sectorspdrs.com. Now, these are nine ETFs that divide the S&P 500 by industry sector. Dan, great to have you with us.
Ron, always a pleasure. Thank you.
It's been said that a good defense is your best offense. And we've seen that with consumer staples, ticker symbol XLP, also utilities, XLU, both of these sectors outperforming the S&P 500 over the past 52 weeks by around 5%. Each of these sectors are defensive, and they're also among the smallest industry sectors within the S&P. Do you think that equity investors are becoming more defensive?
I think they were in 2014. If you throw in there healthcare as another classic defensive sector, those three really outperformed the S&P and delivered 20% type of returns over the last 52 weeks. What I'm seeing, though, is that that's changing a little bit here in 2015. So you're starting to see a little rotation away from those classic defensive type sectors and a little bit more into the early cycle sectors that you would expect as the economy picks up. But utilities as a standout in 2014, that you get the return that you received plus the dividend, people did well being defensive in 2014.
Now, for just the fourth time in the last 50 years, the S&P yielded more than 10-year U.S. Treasuries. Now, it happened in 1962, 2008, 2011, and it briefly happened here in 2015. So what does it mean for income-focused investors looking for more dividends?
Well, it means a couple of things. One, that treasury yield is real low, you know, and you know, the talk about when this will back up has been talked about for years now, and it's still not happening. So even today, you're right there today in terms of the S&P yielding about 2%, the 10-year treasury about 2%. I think what it makes people do is look for alternative sources for income. And equity income is one of the, you know, nice places to go when looking for that. And some of the sectors that traditionally, you know, deliver higher dividend yield, like utilities that we mentioned earlier, the you know, dividend there is about 330, 340. And the nice part about the equity side is that your income can actually go up. You know, so when you buy a bond, your income stream is set. On the equity side, something like utilities, you get a 330, 340 yield. And, you know, the way it's been recently, you see a 3 or 4% increase in dividends over time. So that compounding over time really adds significantly to the overall total return for those sectors.
Dan Dolan, Director of Wealth Management Strategies at the Select Sector Spiders, joining us. SectorSpiders.com is the website. Go there. Now, energy, ticker symbol XLE, was the only S&P 500 sector to post a negative return in 2014. And for fourth quarter earnings, the sector is expected to report the largest year-over-year decline in earnings of all S&P sectors. Yet, we see energy holding up pretty well. What do you see happening with energy shares?
Well, you know, we actually have made a turn on the energy side here in early 2015. So XLE, which is the energy spider, is delivering a positive return year-to-date. you know, just barely, but, you know, from where we started the year to where we are now. Everything in this sector is driven by the price of oil. So when you see, you know, the price of oil drop into the 40s, earnings are called into question for the sector. What we've seen is it looks like it's kind of bottoming out a little bit, has bounced back here a little bit, and the stocks are reflecting that. So you've seen a bit of a rally in the last couple of weeks in the energy sector. To me, it's one of these sectors that people should own. It should own it either because you believe oil's going higher, or you even own it as a hedge in your own portfolio that if oil does go higher, your bills are higher. You're paying more for gas. You're paying more to heat your house. Let those stocks make some more money for you. So on the downside, it helps. And if the prices do go higher, owning some equities in the energy sector may cushion the blow a little bit for you.
Another commodities-focused sector is materials, XLB. And this also is a very tiny sector group within the S&P 500. The second tiniest, right after utilities. And we've seen, I guess, sort of a turn here, too, in materials. It's not a sexy sector when you compare it to something like technology or healthcare. But nevertheless, XLB and materials are off to a pretty strong start in 2015. What's driving them?
I think it's what we touched on earlier. It's the move from defensive to more early cycle type of sectors like materials, where if the economy is picking up, the kind of the core components that goes into the building of whatever it may be, you know, you're looking at these companies do very well as the economy expands. So something like Dow Chemical or Monsanto, things like that, that, you know, the underlying components that make things, real things that people buy, these companies do well as the economy expands. Material sectors is the best performing sector year to date. And again, I think people are expecting that the economy picks up. Sectors like this should do well.
And another part of that, too, in XLB has been a bounce in mining stocks, which have some exposure there in materials, and that's been a really, really hot-performing sector. If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Index Investing Show. We're pleased to have with us Dan Dolan, Director of Wealth Management Strategies at the Select Sector Spider ETFs. Go to sectorspiders.com. Now, the Sector Spider ETFs just reduced annual expense ratios from 16 basis points to 15 basis points, that's 0.15%, in yet another shareholder-friendly move. And I think it's important for us to be very clear and explicit that low expense ratios are good, but they're only one component of an ETF owner's cost. What else should ETF investors be focusing on besides low expense ratios?
Yes, the expense ratio is important, but as important is you have to buy and sell exchange-traded funds. So you have to get in, you have to get out, and in doing so, there's a bid and an offer on the exchange. Whether you're buying that from the New York Stock Exchange or over the counter, there's a bid, the price that someone is willing to buy it for, and the offer, what they're willing to sell it to you for. And, you know, the best ETFs have the tightest spreads between the bid and offer, and many, including ours, will have a one penny spread between the bid and the offer. And that really minimizes the total cost. So you have the expenses of the underlying, you know, ETF itself, but then the cost to get in, and if you have to sell, what's the price if you have to sell? How much lower is that than when you're buying it? So that's the spread that we refer to. And then the third piece is the transaction cost itself, which in many places that has come down dramatically over the last few years. Many online type of brokerage operations, you can do that for free if you have decent assets in the account, or in fee-based accounts, that's all part of it. But the transaction cost, the bid offer spread, and the overall expense ratio on an annual basis.
Those are good points. I wanted to ask you, Dan, about this trend of commission-free trading of ETFs among brokerage platforms. They've got their lists, each one of them, whether that's TD Ameritrade or Fidelity or Charles Schwab. And, of course, there is a cost there. Just because it's labeled or marketed as commission-free trading, obviously, you know, someone's absorbing those costs. What do you make of this trend of commission-free trading in exchange-traded funds?
You know, Ron, it's a good point because, you know, you know what you're buying. You know, I mean, sometimes if they offer free commissions to buy and sell a certain ETF when another ETF will deliver the, you know, similar exposure at a fraction of the cost in terms of the overall expense ratio, or maybe the spreads are wider and, you know, things like that. So, you know, view it for what it is. It's a piece of the overall cost. There's a reason they're offering it to you for free, and other, you know, similar types of products maybe even a better, option for you, even paying the commission to buy and sell it. So, you know, again, it's rule number one, know what you're buying before you enter that trade.
One last thing before you take off, and we've talked about this so many times, ETFs as alternatives or substitutes to individual stocks. Why does that make sense?
Well, you look at it today, and I read recently where for 10 years in a row now, the investing public has reduced their exposure to individual equities. So 2014 was the 10th year in a row, and it may even went back another year or two before that. But for 10 years in a row, people have reduced their exposure to individual stocks. It's not that they're not owning equities. They're owning equities in a different way, and that may be through a mutual fund or more recently through the exchange-traded fund. So you look at, some of the names like Berkshire Hathaway, Google, Amazon, things like that, where you just can't buy, $500, $600 stocks, that type of thing. So you put it in a basket, you're able to get exposure to names like that that you wouldn't normally be able to do if you were buying individual shares.
Great ideas. Thank you for joining us. You just heard from Dan Dolan at Select Sector Spider ETFs. This is the Index Investing Show. We'll be right back.
The Index Investing Show with Lon DeLegge.
Welcome back from the break. You're listening to the Index Investing Show, 877-711-5611. At Index Show is my Twitter handle. I'm Ron DeLegge. So let's get right to what we were talking about earlier, our portfolio report card for PLR in Medley, Florida, $863,000 investment portfolio divided across two traditional IRAs, two Roth IRAs, and a joint taxable account. They are in their early 60s, and we already looked at their portfolio, the 17 mutual funds and seven ETFs that they own. We looked at cost, which by my measurement yardsticks is way too high. And then we also looked at diversification. They've missing some major asset classes like global real estate as well as commodities. Now we're going to take a look at three final areas and then give them a final report card of A, B, C, D, or F. Let's take a look at risk. Now, the risk character of a portfolio should always be 100% compatible with the risk profile of you, the person, of me, the person. What I'm talking about is compatibility. So if you say to me, Ron, I'm a conservative investor, and then I look at your portfolio and you've got 80%, 90% exposure to stocks, well, that's not right, is it? There's some lack of compatibility there. It doesn't match what you're telling me. And so PLR explained to me that they are neither aggressive nor conservative investors, but they're somewhere in between. We call this moderate investors. And PLR's IRA, HERS, holds 68% stocks, 23% bonds, and then just over 8% to multi-asset class funds. Now, her IRA is valued at $484,910. And then some of those funds, again, that she owns, we gave some of those ticker symbols to you at the outset, AQMIX, VQT, BGFRX. I mean, these are some of the funds that are held inside her portfolio. Some of those same funds are also duplicated in his portfolio. His IRA. His IRA is valued at $292,000, and his asset mix is 52% stocks, 25% bonds, and then just over 22% to the multi-asset class funds. Now, as far as what I can see, their asset class does, or asset mix does closely match how they describe themselves as moderate investors. And of course, we have to also take into account that they're in their early 60s. So it has to be an age appropriate asset mix. And in this case, I think it is. Nevertheless, a 20 to 40% stock market correction would subject PLR's portfolio and current mix to $100,000 to $200,000 in potential losses. Moreover, since the bulk of the combined portfolios are in actively managed funds, not broadly diversified low-cost index funds, then what we've got here is another element of risk. and that is the inability of these fund managers to beat benchmarks over time. And that certainly adds an unexpected dimension of risk to the portfolio. It's not just market risk. Now all of a sudden we've got manager risk. So in terms of risk, I don't think their current asset mix is out of line, but I think they've got some other issues with risk that they certainly can improve. In terms of tax efficiency, minimizing the negative impact of taxes, this is our next grading category, is really all that everyone, all of us with money should be doing, right? We should be minimizing purposely and deliberately the negative impact of taxes with our investments. So the question is, how do we do that? How do we minimize the threat of taxes and that having it devour our money? Well, this is easily accomplished by two things. Number one, investing in tax-efficient vehicles like index ETFs. That's very easy to do. And then number two, having smart asset location. Now, another element of this is avoiding premature retirement plan distributions for those of us that are under age 59 and a half, and also the threat of potential tax liabilities when it comes to 401k loans, which, again, threaten our money, especially if we decide to terminate a job and we still got an outstanding 401k loan. Well, that could cause some big troubles in the tax department. So in PLR's portfolio, they've got these two Roth IRAs, two traditional IRAs, and a joint taxable account. I observed no tax efficiency problems with their combined portfolios. Very, very well done. Last up is performance. And performance is the final grading category for Ron DeLegge's portfolio report card. Your performance return will always do one of two things. Number one, it will validate your portfolio's design. Or number two, it will incriminate it. Those are the only two possibilities. And it's how a person's portfolio performs against a blended index benchmark that corresponds to the person's asset mix. That is what reveals the unadulterated truth about performance. There are no other points of references or benchmarks or yardsticks. That's the only yardsticks that matter and that you should be using. And that's the only ones I use, by the way, in analyzing and executing portfolio report cards for you, the people. Now, PLR's combined portfolios had a one-year gain of $10,496, or 1.7%. Now, that was from the end of 2013 to the end of 2014. Well, how did that compare to our blended index yardstick? Well, the yardstick gained over that same time frame just over 5% versus PLR's gain of 1.7%. Put another way, PLR's underperformance of 3.5% is unsatisfactory. So PLR's final portfolio report card grade is a C. This means that PLR's portfolio has meaningful structural weaknesses, and we just identified some of those on today's broadcast. The biggest problem areas, clearly, are subpar performance and also minimizing investment cost. In each of these subgraded categories, PLR's portfolio flunked. Flunked on performance, flunked on cost, and really paying almost 2% in annual fees on an $863,000 portfolio. If we calculate that out, that's around $17,000 of lost money each and every year. That's far too much to be given away and forfeiting. And also, shame on the portfolio, or shame on the financial advisor who put this portfolio together. The job of an advisor isn't just to give asset recommendations and asset allocation mixes to clients, but the role of a financial advisor should be to deliberately help clients and customers minimize the threat and the negative impact of not just taxes, but investment costs. Clearly, this group of financial advisors or whoever's advising PLR is not doing that. And, you know, it's really surprising to me. It's shocking to see an advisor manage portfolio like this perform so poorly in terms of performance, and not a good portfolio report card, to say the least. So Here's the bottom line. I know that if PLR fixes the weaknesses that I identified inside their investment portfolio, they can and will get a better grade in the future. And more importantly, they can put their investments back on track and reach their goals. Well, how's your investment portfolio doing? Go to PortfolioReportCard.com to find out, and I will analyze and grade your portfolio. So far, I've analyzed and graded more than $50 million worth of portfolios, real money of real people just like you. And if you get an A, I pay you $100. It's also nice to see more people with advisors sending me their portfolios. They want to know if they pass or flunk. Well, I'll tell them, and I will tell you. That does it for another episode of the Index Investing Show. Join us again next week. Adios.
The opinions expressed in this broadcast are not necessarily that of our advertisers, sponsors, or broadcast partners. The discussion of investing is general and should not be construed as investment advice or an offer to buy or sell securities. Listeners are responsible for their own investment decisions and results. Before investing in mutual funds or ETFs, always consult a prospectus for risk, charges, expenses, and other information. Read the prospectus carefully before investing. Past performance is not indicative of future results. No reproduction or dissemination of the Index Investing Show is permitted without the expressed written consent of its producers.